That is a good name, though.
Yeah, I've always liked it.
Yeah, I hope so. Les, thank you for being here with me today. We're going to talk about you being a Lutheran, I think.
Yes, which I'm a baby.
Baby Lutheran. That's okay. Where are you from?
I am from Orange, Texas. Lived here my entire life. We're right on the border of Louisiana, the west side of Louisiana. And from my driveway, it's only about four minutes exactly, and I'm in Louisiana. And I'm barely
4 minutes from God's country. That's amazing. all my family on my mom's side are from Louisiana.
Oh, okay. I've got some family that live over there. And with the exception of visiting them like once a year, which we'll be doing that in just a couple weeks, I've barely even left Texas. I did when I was 29. I'm in my mid-30s now, but when I was 29, I finally actually like left Texas and went to Kentucky for about a week, and then I came right back. So I don't do a whole lot of traveling.
I know it recorded it, but I didn't catch any of that. You said I'm in my mid-30s now, and then it cut out.
Oh, well, essentially, I haven't done a whole lot of traveling. I did go to, when I was 29, to Kentucky, but other than that, I don't travel.
Okay. Yeah.
I'd like to, I just don't.
Same. I would like to, but I'm broke.
Yeah, that's us. We got a bunch of kids, and we also foster, so that like that's a whole nother little thing to we have to jump through just to, if we wanted to travel, we'd have to clear it with them and all that. So it's just another little fun step we'd have to do.
Yeah, my wife's always like, man, wouldn't it be nice to go to Europe? And I'm like, yeah, it would.
Yeah.
Better watch a YouTube video.
I hit the mic. Yeah, that would be fun.
It would be. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Growing up, I guess you grew up in Texas?
I grew up in Texas. I was born in a different city than what I live in, but just because there ain't no hospitals where I live. But yeah, so I grew up in a Calvinistic IFB church. My grandfather was the pastor, and I always assumed like that was the norm for the IFB, but after I became an adult, I learned we were kind of fringe for IFB. And I'm saying fringe more in a good way after I've learned how typical IFB is. So there were things that were, I'm going to use the word reformed, even though reformed people typically don't like to call Baptists reformed, but there were things that were a little bit more reformed within what I grew up in. But then there were some things that would fit in the standard mold of the IFB. We were King James only, couldn't dance, no drinking, anything like that. But some doctrinal stuff would align with some of the reform, but not enough to actually call it reform. And
can I just tangent real quick?
Go ahead.
Well, KJV only. Okay, I understand the what, but like why?
I don't understand the why. Yeah, I don't either. And you ask them, and even the King James don't fall it, like have anything within it that would say this is the standard, because they'll all say we follow the Bible. That's where we get our doctrine from. And you bring that up and they'll tell you to go to Psalm 12, but then the argument just falls apart. There's nothing there in Psalm 12 to really, without just twisting the what it's actually saying. And but that's, there's other arguments, but that was like the main one I always heard was Psalm 12. And
it's so, got to be what is it, verse 6, the words of the Lord are flawless.
Yes. And then in verse 7 it says like I will keep them, but the them is referring to verse 5, and
the poor. I think
it's verse 5. Yeah, it's referring to, and then so, but they'll say that them is referring to verse 6, and which I don't know Hebrew. I'm not,
and that yeah. Well, that still doesn't make sense though that it would be talking about the King James version. Yeah. Like there's.
And if you read the translator's notes at the beginning, I think it's on page 11 of it. It even says that you need to keep updating to like the modern tongue. And granted, that's me paraphrasing it heavily, but that's the gist of what they're saying. And but yeah, I don't know. It's a hill I never really wanted to die on when I was in there, but when I was in there, I could have cared less about anything, you know. I was a kid, and we left whenever my grandpa retired, and then I went to a Southern Baptist church. And but
how was that from going from IFB to SBC?
Doctrinally, the church we went to afterwards, there was some alignment, but he used the New King James, and then the youth pastor used the NIV. And when I saw that, like, I did, I guess I had it ingrained in my head, and I was like, this is heresy using these. And I was, but I got over it really quick. And but I guess to backtrack a little bit, I remember it being in the having a Baptist theology of baptism and everything. I wanted to partake in. We did have a closed communion. There was no. It was real similar to how the Lutheran church would be. And as far as who can partake in all that. And I wanted to partake in it so bad, even though we used grape juice and I don't even remember what kind of bread we used. My grandma actually would make the bread. I don't remember what it looked like or anything. But it was a really small church too. Very, very small. And, well, it was small, really small by the time my grandpa retired. And, but I wanted to partake so bad that we didn't do altar calls, nothing like that. But I did go up to my grandpa after church one day while we always visited at their house in between the morning and evening service. And in between the services, I approached them and I gave them all the correct answers. And this was Mother's Day of like 2000 or either 2000 or 1999. I don't remember which one, but it was Mother's Day. I do remember that. And then.
Okay. So then you were like 13.
12. And
okay, yeah.
And it darn. So anyway, so yeah, I gave him all the correct answers that he was looking for. I'd had that much information down. And Father's Day, I was baptized of that year. I don't remember why we waited like a month or whatever it is in between the two, but we waited till Father's Day. And then I was able to participate in the Lord's Supper after that. And, but like looking back in a,
how often did,
oh, we did it not a little bit more regular than quarterly, but it wasn't much more often than that.
Gotcha.
And I got to say, I do like doing it every week. That is, it's been a big blessing. But anyway, yep. So I guess it wouldn't have been like right after we, it probably would have been like another month or so before the next time we did communion and or Lord's Supper, as we would have called it there. And I was just a kid, but I had that mentality still of, oh, I know I did this for the wrong reason. I just wanted to partake in this and blah, blah, blah. And being in the, going into the SBC after, which my grandpa retired because my grandma got onset Alzheimer's relatively young. She wasn't even 60 when she was diagnosed. I think she was like 57 when she was diagnosed, somewhere in there. And after a while, it took a real big toll on my grandpa. So he retired. And when he retired, we left and started going to the SBC church. We started going there because that's where all my friends went. And, but when I say we, at this point, it became more of just my mom, me, and then my brother went somewhere else and my sister didn't really go. And then my dad, he worked shift work, so he wasn't able to come all the time anyway, even before all that. And so it was essentially just me and my mom going here. And by this point, I'm 17. Yeah, I was 17 when my grandpa retired. And so I only had about a year within a youth group because we didn't have it at my grandpa's church. But
that heretical NIV using youth group.
Yeah, that was a real big shock. Oh, and I remember one time I let my pride swell up so bad. I was just visiting with a friend at this point. I had stayed the night with him and then went to church with him. We were probably 15, 16. And I had just gotten this hoodie like the Christmas before that had John 15:5 on it. And I happened to go on this one particular Sunday and their memory verse for the week was John 15:5. And he asked who could recite it. I looked around. I was like, dang, ain't nobody got their hands up. I was like, I know this one. I got that on my hoodie. And so I shot my hand up and I recited it. I recited it in the King James, though. And
in the King James.
And
he that abideth.
And so I that was just all me just being prideful little 15, 16 year old. That was probably the only verse I even knew besides John 3:16. And but yeah, so started going there at like 17 and like that, just hearing the NIV and New King James was like, oh snap. But I got over it real quick because I mean really I didn't care. It was just, I guess, that did ingrain within me a little bit. No, I don't think he was a Calvinist though, that pastor. He never really went over soteriology too much. And I just remember him saying something about John Piper, and he's like, oh, there's some things I don't agree with him on. And I just took it as predestination. And, but there was not a killer for me. And I was there for a good many, I say many years. It really wasn't that long. I was there until I met my wife. And then we started going to, when we got married, started going to church with her, and it was Methodist. And that was, it was UMC. It wasn't like a free Methodist anything. It was full on what you think of when you think Methodist. When I first started going,
I don't think any good things.
I don't either. Though I do, we'll get into it later, but I am thankful for my time being there. Every church I've been a part of, I have had great experiences. I don't have anything ill against anybody personally. And, but yeah, when we first started going there, I was working, not when we first, it was probably after a year we got married. No, we had our son, and then I started going. When we got married, I dropped out of college. I was 21 when we got married, and she was 19, but I dropped out of college with only like a semester left. And after about a year, I started back up, and I was working 7/12s and then going to school full time. So during that point, after about a year in the Methodist church, I was out of church for like 6 months. And the only time in my life I've ever been out. But during that time I was out, they wound up getting a lady pastor. And that was very, very weird. I've growing up IFB, then going into the SBC, never been a part of my theology.
Not round here, partner. Yeah. Not round here.
And so when I started going, I was like, man, this is really weird. I tried talking my wife into leaving. And she was like, well, you know, the way you work, I don't think you get a choice in the say or whatever. And I was like, oh, I guess you're right. You know, I'm working a bunch. And so we stayed there. And we were at that particular one, which up until 2017. And there I don't really have a lot. The only thing I really remember is during communion, I would be thinking like, just like, Lord, get us away out of here. Get us away out of here. And then eventually I got to the point where I was like, well, just use me where I'm at. And then we had a massive hurricane that took the church out, and they shut that location down. And we wound up going to one down the street. And it was there that I started getting like an appreciation for confessions, the Apostles' Creed, the Nicene Creed. The UMC actually has a confession, but nobody's bound to it. And I've got a copy of it on my bookshelf, and I've read through it, and but I remember when we got to this church, I was like, I liked the pastor a lot. He was a great guy, very nice. The very first service we attended, he wound up quoting The Hobbit, and I was like, awesome. It's like, I love The Hobbit. I love Lord of the Rings. I'm a big nerd. And we got along really well and everything. But and he's the one who helped me appreciate the creeds and showing me the importance of them. But then their actual confession, I forget what the book's called, It was just almost, it was there, but non-existent. And, but I, when we started going, I started just praying for opportunities to do something. I was out during that time where I wasn't really in church all that often because of work. By this time I was in a different job and I was able to attend, but I started just praying for opportunities to almost, I've never been a charismatic, but like the, my prayers were probably kind of charismatic in a way of like just the language probably that I was using, but it, I was just praying for opportunities to be able to serve. And then I got asked to be an usher. And I immediately, I was like, this isn't what I wanted to do. But then I quickly just pushed that aside and I was like, oh yeah, I'll do it. I'll serve wherever I can. And it wasn't long after that that I started, they asked me to lead a Sunday school class. And then I got asked to go on a trip with them for the youth, just to chaperone. And that was my first mm-hmm. time like really leaving the state of Texas. That's when I went to Kentucky. And at the end of it, they actually asked me to fill the youth position. So I did that for a couple years.
Wow.
And but what was weird though is they always, my nickname there was the Baptist. And so that just really shows a lack of I never considered myself lack of discernment. I never considered myself Wesleyan in any capacity ever. And like I let it I let it be known, and like my nickname was literally the Baptist. They'd call me the Baptist. So they they were gonna let a Baptist.
I had a buddy who was NAR charismatic. Honestly, I would say heretic. Mm-hmm. Got hired on as a youth pastor at a UMC church, being an NAR charismatic kind of guy.
Yeah.
And they knew, and they just, you know, he would do the, when it was like youth Sunday, it was like, man, he'd drag in the praise band, and they had this beautiful old, gorgeous sanctuary where they had liturgical service. And then on youth Sunday, he would come in and just be like, you know, everybody come up front. The Lord is moving for healing.
I guess to, I mean, this would be more in this and not really have anything to do with how I became Lutheran, but during the split that the UMC went through, I had already, we had already left. The church we were at had gotten really weird, and I'll get into that. But I still had some very close friends that went there. And so I was just keeping up with everything because, like, emotionally, I was invested in the people. And I cared for them. And so I was like, just like praying everything worked out good. But they wound up having this little conference thing in Texas. The UMC put it on to dispel the disinformation and blah, 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 blah about what's really going on with the split. And so I was still in the email list at this point, and they emailed me the link to the conference that was held. And I was like, it's like 3 hours long, but it's like, I'm going to watch every second of it. And I think I watched it like three times, not back to back, but I've watched it three times. And every person they had on the, what would you call it? The panel, the discussion panel, when they were telling you why they became Methodist in the first place, it all boiled down to, I can believe whatever the heck I want to and not be questioned about it. Every single one of them. And the questions that were being asked.
Yep.
Like, have you ever seen the, like, Bethel trying to do their damage control videos?
No.
Well, it was basically like that. They would have so that I don't even know their names, but like their main guy and then one of the other second main guys, Bill Johnson, the Valeton guy. I think it was them two.
Chris Valeton, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was them two. It was for sure Johnson. But they would ask just easy questions and was like, is the Bible the authoritative word of God? Oh, yes, 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 yes. Just asking very easy questions like that. And but it's like you're asking yourself the questions and you're making it easy. And it was just, it was awful. And there was the exact same thing that was going on in this conference about the UMC split. Just, you know, I'm Methodist because I can believe whatever the heck I want to believe and not be questioned about it. And then let me ask really basic, dumb questions so you just think I'm Orthodox. But so I guess going back to out of the rabbit hole. So I wound up accepting it. They the youth position, and they voted me in. We were there for about 2 years with me being in this position. My wife was the children's director almost immediately. No, it was immediately. That was the whole reason why we started going there. Nice. They wanted her to be the children's director. And then since they do all that itinerant pastor stuff of moving them around every couple years,
after a
short time of us being there, new guy, he leaves, we get a lady pastor again. I was like, told my wife, I was like, I'm done. Like, we're leaving. And, I was like, I Googled this lady and I was like, she is going to bring.
Turns out she's a psycho.
Yeah. Yeah. Like not even joke, like spot on.
Shocker.
And
yeah,
my wife's like, no, like the way the Methodist church works, give it 6 months and you can vote them out. So I was like, all right, I love the people here. I'll wait that long. They're going to see the bad side of it and we'll vote her out in 6 months. 6 months rolls around. Nah, she's still there. And I was like, I'm done. Like, I was already not emotionally checked out. I was mentally checked out. The only times I was happy to be there was when I was just doing youth stuff. And
yeah,
like it was, it got to the point, like I was on the board as well. I was on the board. I ran AV stuff, I did a bunch of stuff there. And, so in board meetings though, she would call like Gandhi and Buddha, spiritual brothers in Christ. And I'm looking around like, what the heck? And then ask about it. And like I think with that, I had already actually stepped down and we were already officially leaving when she was saying that. And I didn't feel like it was my place to speak up on that stuff since we were essentially done. I was just fulfilling the last couple weeks. And I regret not saying something though. I really do. And it was awful. It was bringing in a bunch of stuff like that. A lot of NAR type stuff of you can speak it into existence. Then my wife would do like a little children's message thing before taking the kids out to the children's church, which I hated doing that. I'd leave the kids in the sermon. I hated seeing kids shipped off. But what was sad,
you know, they might disrupt church for the rest of us.
There was a few times I wanted to disrupt in the middle of it because it was awful. And
Reverend Deborah.
Yeah. And her name was Val. And at first I was like, oh, are we going to get somebody like Val Kilmer? And then I Google and it's like, oh, no, it's a woman pastor. But the her first Christmas service, she walks out dressed as an angel and was wearing a dress that was way too short for no matter what figure you had, but especially she shouldn't have been wearing it. And but she had these wings on, that short white dress, a little clothes hanger with a halo. And I'm in the AV booth and it's dark, so I know she couldn't see my face, but my wife sang in the choir and she looked directly at me and my eyes were probably 2 feet in diameter. I was just like, are you kidding me? And the sermon was, she was Gabriel's sister angel and she was going to tell you the real story of what happened. I've got it saved on my phone. I'll send it to you when we're done. It is bad.
Please. Plez, I have to ask you, what's the real story?
I don't even remember. It was just nonsense. It was just straight up nonsense. And
Yeah.
I do remember it made her her name was Gabriella or something like that. And it was kind of like a feminine empowerment type of speech, but like, I don't really remember the actual gist of everything she said. It was just nonsense. And, she did all that and my eyes were big. I was like, my wife's name's Ellie. I was like, Ellie, we're done. I can't do this anymore. And she's like, no. And I was like, oh, like I was so mentally checked out. I was not happy to be, even if, like, I have a really good friend who's no longer there now, but at the time, like I wasn't even happy to see him. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. Mm. And man, there was just so much. Whenever she'd talk, it was just nothing. Like the little stories my wife would give the kids was so much more packed with theology than what she did in the quote unquote sermon. And there was just literally nothing there. She would just tell some story and it was kind of like, have you ever watched The Office?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like when Michael's like, sometimes I start a sentence and I don't know where I'm going or whatever he says. I don't remember, but it was just basically that. And like, she actually, and as much as she fought for like feminism stuff, she treated the women in the church like garbage. Like personally me, like she treated me great. I had nothing, no bad experience from like a personal one-on-one, you know, dealing with her other than just her theology just wasn't there at all. And, but like my wife, she treated like garbage and I was hunting with a buddy. And I got a text message. She's like, I'm done. I was like, oh, thank God. And like, I was rejoicing, like in the middle of the woods, just like, yes, like finally I'm free of this place. But whenever it came time to tell the kids bye, or first to tell them that, you know, I was like, hey, in a month I'll be gone and just won't be here. Like that was hard enough. But like that, the final goodbye, like I straight up cried. I couldn't hold it in. The few years I had with them was probably the best experience I had, because they forced me to work out theology, which in that point pushed me more and more towards the Reformed side. And I had like commentaries from Wesley, but I always thought those were rubbish. And I always went to Calvin. I know
people always talk about what a great theologian Wesley is, but
I don't see it. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he's a smart guy, but
I think he's pretty trash.
But I always wind up going to Calvin, Spurgeon, and why can't I think of his name? No, well, he's Presbyterian. But I went to those three the most in the commentaries, and they would ask me some pretty legit questions, and because the way I set it up, I had no idea what I was doing. Never thought I'd be a leading youth or anything like that. But at first I started, they gave me a little things like, oh, just follow this little formula. And the formula was garbage. They could tell I wasn't into it. And I eventually got to a point where I was like, you know what? We're just going to sit down together at a table in the room. We're going to work through Matthew, start verse one. However long it takes us, that's what it takes us, and have an open discussion. And it worked great, and went from like one kid to about 20 by the time I left. And I know it was nothing to me, because I got probably one of the worst personalities you can have when it comes to trying to teach people. And so it was definitely all God bringing those kids there. But it wound up, they asked me some pretty dang good questions, and I would have to be like, look, give me till next week. I'll look it up and do my best to get back with you if I couldn't answer it right then. And, but after she came in and we left, I was like, I can't be in another Methodist church. And I was like, I was already starting to question at this point if I was Baptist again because of all the, or if I was still Baptist because of all the, everything I was reading from Calvin. But I still wanted to be Baptist. Like, I don't know. It was still like ingrained in my mind that like, if you ain't Baptist, you're not a real Christian. And right. So I was like, we got to go to another Baptist church. And so I start looking online. And I come across one about 30 minutes from our house. I was like, oh, man, this looks like the church I grew up in. I emailed the pastor. I was like, hey, here's my phone number. Can you call me? We're looking for a new church. I'll give you this story. And I'd like you to answer some questions. And then I'd also like to meet with you in person. So we, on the initial phone call, we talked for maybe 45 minutes. He answered my questions. It went really well. Asked him what the gospel was. Asked him how one must be saved. And he answered everything pretty dang well. Like very well. He gave me a very good explanation of what the gospel was. And then gave me the, you know, faith alone through Christ and all that. And like all of his answers over the phone were good. And then the phone in person went really well too, except I'm thinking this is still like my grandpa's church. And I was like, oh, those dang Arminian Wesleyans at the Methodist church. And he's like, well, we're not Calvinist here either. I was like, oh, snap. Like, I let my mouth get away from me on that one. And I was like, I was like, that's cool. And then, so we talked about like predestination a little bit, but then I got back into like asking him more questions, and I thought he answered every single one of them perfectly. So we started visiting the church, and then,
This was what things kind of going, church again?
Oh, this was an IFB. I wound up joining an IFB church.
Okay.
At first thinking it was more like my grandpa's, and then it wound up being your typical IFB church. Granted, though, these were some of the nicest people I've ever met, past like everybody. If you would have walked in with blue hair, gauges, everything, they would have warmly welcomed you. So in that aspect, they were great. But so we
had that old timey leather lung preaching.
Yeah. the guy was, he was fairly young. I think he's only 40 now. He's not much older than I am. And, but we get past the, I guess the honeymoon phase of everything, and I start noticing red flags. And by this time, I'm not Baptist anymore. I was fine with being in a Baptist church, even though I was definitely leaning. I would already come to the, accept infant baptism and other things, but I was fine with being there at this point. It's just, I couldn't call myself a Baptist anymore. And
right. Closer and to a Presbyterian probably.
Yeah. And there's like only one around me, and it was too far away, for my wife to want to drive. But, I'll get into that later. But he started like just dropping some red flags, like behind the pulpit. He'd make like doing basic plumbing or changing a tire, like gospel issues, like straight up gospel issues. And then he got to calling the sovereignty, just God's sovereignty, a lie from the devil. And I confronted him about that. And his answer was, I don't remember what his answer was, but I was like, that's a garbage answer. But I was just like, whatever. And I started trying to talk my wife into leaving this church, even though I was the one who kind of forced her to join it. Not kind of, I straight up forced her to join it. And then, like our son, he's autistic, and so change is really hard on him. And so that was two reasons why she didn't want to leave, was because I forced her to join this church, and then he was just getting used to being here. But he straight up would start saying some weird stuff, like God's sovereignty is a lie from the devil. And then the last straw was, he said, Jesus never died, behind the pulpit.
That's actually heresy. I don't know that it's blasphemy, but.
He kind of did a double speak. He was like, Jesus died on the old rugged cross, but Jesus never died. He's forever alive. Amen. And like, I heard some amens, and I'm looking around and I was like, are y'all serious? And I'll email you that one too. Cause like, I listened to that like three or four times to make sure I heard them right. And, but I told my wife, I was like, I'm done. I can't go back. I didn't even confront him about this one. I was just like, I'm done. And, but we told him a little bit later, is like, hey, I just told him I can't, I'm not a Baptist anymore. It was like, I'm not dispensational. Like there's nothing about me that's Baptist. And, it was like, I know if I stay here, then you'd just be worrying about like, oh, I'm going to, in your mind, whisper lies to everybody. So I think it would just be best if we leave. And, so I was like, Ellie, I know I forced you to go to this one. I'm probably going to be forcing you to go to the next one. I was like, we got to go to this Presbyterian church. And she's like, where is it at? And I told her, and I was like, oh, it's way too far. I ain't going. And so I eventually talked to her and was like, let's at least just visit it once to see. And she agreed to it. And we went and visited. I enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. People there were really nice. They welcomed us. But she was like, no, not for me. She's like, I'm not going to Calvinist church. And I was like, ah. And then plus she was saying it was too far, which it ain't the furthest drive in the world, but at the time gas was almost, was over $4 here. So I was like, you know, all right, fine. Mm-hmm. And so I start looking around, and I know about the only thing I knew about Lutherans at this point was how the church got started. I knew about Martin Luther. I knew what he taught, but he was okay. But other Lutherans were heretics for what they believe. I didn't go that far with it, but but
yeah,
I was probably a douchebag about it at the same time. And but I was like, I was trying to find like a compromise, because she was still holding on to the Wesleyan stuff. And I wanted to be in a confessional church, and one that actually held to the confession. And so I happened to come across the LCMS church just down the road from us. Didn't even know it was there. Never. My kids even played baseball literally right across the street from it. I never knew it was there. And so I did the same thing. I reached out, emailed them, and they called me, and it was the elder, and he explained to me that they're a small congregation. They're without a pastor right now, but he could answer any questions I had. So we talked for probably 2 hours, and then I asked him all the same stuff. Then I was like, all right, I think me and my family will come visit. And then he explained to me that they do communion every week, and that we wouldn't be able to partake in it, but we could go up for a blessing. And I let them know how I grew up.
How do they do communion if they don't have a pastor?
We borrow a pastor from Beaumont. And so our service is later in the day, and so he just comes and fills in. And
gotcha.
And I know it's got to be taxing, because he does two services at the church he's actually installed at. But I should have said that in the first place. Anyway, he explained all that, and I was like, oh yeah, that's fine with me. That's pretty much how I grew up, with just in a more Baptist style of it. And I don't know if it was hard for him, but after visiting and seeing how small the church was, which it was bigger than my grandpa's church when he retired, but just seeing how small it was, and then let me know that I couldn't partake over something that could potentially have been something to push me away, just made me gain a lot of respect for him for sticking to the doctrine, to their confession. And when our first service to visit, one of my daughters, I've got three daughters, and then a son's my oldest. And, that was something else too, was that, you know, I've got a big family through fostering and all that. And so that was like potentially us, which we did join, but potentially us, a big family coming to join and adding to the numbers, you know, like, and I had let them know too, that like, we're a big family. And, but so it wound up just being, me, two of my daughters, and then my son, And at the time, the two daughters that went with me were foster. We've adopted one of them, and we're in the process of adopting the other one right now. And
that's awesome.
So we went, and they walked me through the bulletin before the service, reminded me that I couldn't partake in communion. And then I was like, all right. I was so freaking lost, even though they explained it to me. Not that it was hard. It was just so foreign to me. And when we left, I asked my son, I was like, so what'd you think about it? He's like, they got a singing problem. I was like, what do you mean? I thought they sounded pretty good. He's like, no, they sing everything. I was like, oh yeah, that was kind of weird. And, cause we do the song liturgy, and which I've grown to love, and, it helps me memorize. Oh, yeah. And which I'm sure it helps dang near everybody to memorize. But,
fun fact, that's why the liturgy historically is chanted or sung, because you remember it easier.
Yeah. And see, so like the chanting, I always thought that was like Gregorian or a Latin chant or just like, you know, the Halo theme song type stuff.
Oh yeah.
And then after coming into it and then learning that it's in English, but it's also Bible. And I was just like, oh wow, like they're not crazy after all. And so we went back. I told my wife about it, and I was like, you know, it was weird. Like there were some things that the liturgy was similar to what we experienced in the Methodist church. I was like, so you'd be a little bit familiar with that, but overall, I was like, this is something that would take getting used to. We went back the next week, and we've only missed two services since then. First time we missed was actually our first, it would have been Easter. We officially joined Palm Sunday, became communing members. We had to miss Easter because I wound up being in the hospital. And I was like, oh man.
Oh.
And, but the cool thing was word got to the pastor, and he unannounced in between services, the church he's installed at, and then, church I go to, he came and visited me in the hospital, and I thanked him. It was just a pleasant surprise because I wasn't expecting it at all. And and then we wound up just being out of town a couple months ago, and for family reunion, and I went to my second ever Lutheran church in Lake Charles. And that was a nice experience because it was essentially the same, just different faces.
Yeah.
And so I literally became a Lutheran because of God's providence. I was trying to be a Presbyterian and
trying hard to be a Presbyterian.
Yeah. And lo and behold, I am a Lutheran.
That's amazing. How hard was it to come around on the sacraments?
It took a lot of reading. Since I'm still new, I'm obviously not an expert in any of it. I've had conversations with some friends who are of a different persuasion. I do have a podcast. I'm not going to say the name. I don't promote it at all. I am definitely in league with Hans that there's too many podcasts. I only started doing it to to get myself to talk and work through the doctrine. So I don't promote it at all, but I do talk with friends, and I talked with one of them who we went to the same SBC church, and he's a Assemblies of God now, and I just wanted to see where we went different routes. And
y'all went really different routes.
Yeah. And we did this talk shortly after we joined, and so I know I did an absolutely garbage of a job trying to say anything. And but we talked about the sacraments and what they mean. And I was already on board with infant baptism, but so that extra little step of the baptismal regeneration, it wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. The Lord's Supper took communion with a true body, true blood, the true presence. Yeah. Took me a little bit more work. Just because I kept coming at it as like, oh, that's too Catholic. That's too Catholic. And
but right.
Like an argument, your podcast actually helped me a lot with it. So thank you.
Yeah.
I've actually listened to every episode, and before you, I went through and I binge listened to them all. And, whenever you had Seth from Becoming the Archetype on, I was like fangirling so hard over that. I was like,
dude, me too. That episode that I spent like half of that time, he was so gracious just talking to him about his band.
Yeah.
I've been a huge fan of them since high school. I mean, honestly, huge L that he's ELCA.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, still, what a great time that was.
I thought the conversation went really well. He was very gracious, and I mean, I know there's a lot of major disagreements, but it was a fun listen. And but your podcast helped me a lot. I listened to Wolf Mueller a lot, Jordan Cooper, Jonathan Fisk. I just tried to devour a lot of stuff. And then Luther's commentary on Galatians, he brings up baptism a lot. So that helped me there too.
How about your wife? Was it difficult for her to get on board?
Yeah, she was pretty stubborn, I'm not gonna lie. Sometimes I think she might just agree to get me to shut up. But I don't know. I just like talking about stuff. Even if I disagree with somebody, I like talking about it because it helps me work through what I believe. And I know I could probably come off as a jerk sometimes too. And that's probably why she don't like talking to me about it. But I don't mean to come off as a jerk, and I try not to. And going back to Hans, the Lutheran satire was a big help as well.
Even though
it was all comical,
solid content, man.
It made a lot of sense, and I was like,
a good job.
He does a really good job at keeping it simple, being funny at the same time, but nothing's watered down.
Yeah, the comedy is really disarming, I find. So, yeah. Like, you're having a good laugh, and you don't even realize that he's confronting every wrong thing you believe, you know?
Yeah. And I haven't, like, officially... I know all my reform friends on Twitter probably suspect it, but I haven't actually said anything on Twitter just because I don't want to feel like I've jumped a gun too quickly. Because I don't want to be one of those people that are like, oh, I'm a Calvinist now. Oh, now I'm Arminian. Which I've never been Arminian, but now I'm Catholic. Now I'm Orthodox. Now I'm this. Now I'm that. Like every Thursday, there's something different. And I'm going to keep it low. And, but everything I've been posting, though, like quote wise, has been Lutheran doctrine. So, I mean, I know they at least
Yeah.
or see it.
Well, we're glad to have you in the Lutheran camp, sir. And this has been a really wonderful time for me. We're coming right up here on an hour, so I'm going to have to cut it off. It's about my limit. But, you know, you got my email. Please send me some of those things, the crazy Christmas thing and the IFB Heretic. I want to take a look at that stuff. And do me a favor and tell me what your podcast is.
Oh, I don't want to promote it, man.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. Well, that's, you can tell me when we stop recording because I want to listen to it.
All right. I actually just had a, and it's irregular too, but I actually just did one with a Baptist friend in a coffee shop. I think I did a little bit better articulating the doctrines in it, but it was a very cordial thing. But yeah, I'll send you a link to it. I will say Lutheran's in the name, but that's as far as I'll go right now.
Okay. Well, Plez, it was wonderful talking to you, buddy, and we'll see you around the internet, huh?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me.